Hello there, and welcome to episode number 139 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's catch up today. All right, so we are just days away from spring training games starting for your Toronto Blue Jays. Their Grapefruit League opener kicks off on Saturday against the Philadelphia Phillies, a game that'll be in Dunedin at TD Ballpark. It will be televised, and it'll also have StatCast data available, which if you're like me, and you love collecting data on players, specifically advanced metrics, you're pretty excited about that. So that's going to be a ton of fun. I can't wait. Ricky Tiedemann right now is supposedly lined up to start that game, and outside of Alec Manoah, I can't think of a better choice to have start that game for the Blue Jays. Tiedemann, of course, is a very exciting name that the Blue Jays have in their camp right now. For rotation purposes, obviously, Tiedemann probably has an outside chance of breaking camp with the team. Obviously, right now the Blue Jays starting rotation is for the most part pretty set, right? Kevin Gausman, Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi, and Alec Manoah. And despite the fact that, by all counts, Ricky Tiedemann has really impressed so far this camp, there was a report that came out earlier this week where Ricky Tiedemann threw one of his side sessions with Jose Berríos in attendance. And apparently Berríos, throughout the throwing session, was just chuckling to himself at how good Tiedemann looks right now, which is great. That's, you know, unbelievable news for a guy who, for the most part of 2023, was away from game action because of the biceps strain that he suffered and that plagued him throughout the majority of last season. So to hear that Ricky Tiedemann is off to a phenomenal start early this spring, that has to make you feel really happy if you're the Blue Jays and a fan of this team as well. But it's going to be tough for Ricky Tiedemann to break camp with the Blue Jays, obviously. Manoah is going to have a lot to say about that, of course, as well as Yariel Rodriguez, too, who has now arrived to the Blue Jays. He was a little late because of visa issues, but he's in camp now. He's thrown a side session or two. He's thrown a bullpen as well, or he's thrown batting practice. And it'll be really exciting to see what he looks like, too, once he gets into game action. And I'm really interested to see what the advanced metrics say about his stuff as well. Because we all know, or at least any of you who have done a little research on Y-Rod, is he's got a devastating slider, very high spin rate on that. Fastball's in the upper 90s. So it'll be really interesting to see where those are at this spring. But getting back to Manoah here, because he is ultimately the biggest storyline by far in the Blue Jays camp, because he's their X factor. He really is. And it's been well documented how bad last year was for Manoah, both physically, mentally, everything in between. It was a nightmare. We've been over this already. But the stage is set for him to redeem himself and to repair that relationship with the front office and organization, and to go out there and prove that he's still just as good as he was in 2022, and that 2023 was such an outlier. He looks in phenomenal shape. Reportedly, he's lost around 30 pounds, and it certainly looks like it. He looks a lot more leaner and trimmer. He's now got the long hair and a thick beard too, really rocking that, journeyman look, which is, pretty funny for a 26-year-old, but still, Love the look, appreciate it. You know, it'd be really, really interesting to see what type of adjustments he made over the offseason outside of, you know, obviously his physicality, his shape. But we've heard so far this spring that his mechanics are in a really good position, that he's worked on his tempo, and that, you know, now that he's in better shape, that tempo on the mound should be better, which was an issue for him in 2023 with the new pitch clock that was introduced. It clearly was a struggle for Manoah to try and adjust to that. So I'm really curious to see how he's able to handle that a second time around. And other things I'm looking for too is, you know, the biggest thing is, what's his strike throwing look like? Because the walks have to go down. Like that's, you know, we can talk about all the mechanics and his physical condition and, you know, not dealing with any of the aftermath of his massive uptick in workload from 2020, 2021 to 2022. If Manoah can attack the strike zone, that'd be by far the biggest difference from last season already, because his mentality was, he was more focused on not throwing a ball than attacking the strike zone, right? Like, he went on the record to say that last season before he went down to the minors. And so, you know, that's really something that he needs to be able to prove, that, you know, he can still attack the strike zone and miss barrels. Because that was another thing too. He got hit hard when he was in the strike zone in 2023. So not only was he missing outside the strike zone like crazy, when he went inside the strike zone, he was missing over the heart of the plate. There was no in between. And then secondly, that slider of his, right? It's a great swing and miss weapon when you're able to control it, which he wasn't able to do consistently last season. It looked much improved when he returned from the minors the first time, but it still wasn't quite there. You know, there still wasn't enough strike to ball deployment from him with that pitch. And when you're not able to set it up with a fastball that's consistently located in the strike zone, hitters don't have to respect your slider as much. So we'll see where both of those pitches are this spring. And who knows, maybe he has further developed his changeup too. Because that's a pitch that would certainly help him against left-handed batters too. You know, like, the two-seamer is a great weapon to use on that front half of the plate versus left-handed batters, but, you know, as we've seen previously, if he's able to consistently utilize that changeup low and away to lefties, that opens up the whole other half of the strike zone. So we'll see where that is. Obviously, the changeup in that is way lower on the priority list, especially for the Blue Jays. Right now, you want to see that he looks sharp, right? And he looked like, to me, hearing him speak this spring, it just shows how much confidence he's regained and how he's able to express his personality again, right? Like, one of the best things about Manoah is that rah-rah emotion that he has on the mound, right? We've seen it when he's, you know, retired Alex Verdugo, and he's yelling at him as Verdugo walks back to the dugout, or, you know, when Manoah is telling Garrett Cole to go back to his own dugout, you know, like, that's, in a nutshell, whether you love it or not, that's part of what makes Alec Manoah special. That emotion, his personality, and he lost that last season. And so if he's able to regain that mentality, which it looks like he has, and if the on-field struggles dissipate, it'll all mesh together, right? They work hand-in-hand with each other, his on-field success and his mentality on the mound too. Now, all that being said, Manoah doesn't have to go back to or return to his form as a third place finisher in the Cy Young voting, right? Like, that would be great, but I think at this point that's unrealistic to expect of Manoah at this current time, especially too when you consider the fact that going from 2022 to 2023, Manoah was due for some natural regression. Like, he outperformed himself in 2022. So, you know, there was the expectation that he was going to come down a little bit, nowhere near as much as he ultimately did. But because of that natural regression, I do believe that, you know, to some degree, that 2022 performance we saw Manoah is probably somewhat of an outlier. Now, obviously, 2023 was an outlier in the completely opposite direction. So where do we fall here? It's probably somewhere in between, hopefully at least. And does that mean Alek Manoah, that midway point, does that mean he's a back of the rotation starter, or is he a number two or a number three? Like, that's, you know, that's bigger picture here. We're more smaller picture with Manoah right now, but in the back of your minds, that's something that, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you have to consider moving forward. But for right now, if Manoah can be Toronto's fifth best starting pitcher, that's already a step ahead of where they were last season with Manoah. So it's just, you know, it's great to see him back with the team, looking great, and showing that confidence that we know he has inside of him too. So really looking forward to see Alek Manoah in some games whenever that point comes. Doesn't sound like it's going to come Saturday, but probably just around the corner. So we'll see where that goes. But again, getting back to Yariel Rodriguez, because he's somebody that's going to have a very important spring too, just like Alek Manoah, because there's so much fluidity with somebody like Rodriguez, because there's just so many different avenues that this could go, right? He didn't pitch basically at all last season. He didn't pitch. He didn't return to Japan after representing Team Cuba at the World Baseball Classic. So, and even in the WBC, Rodriguez only threw like a couple of innings as an opener, really. So it's going to take some time for him to be stretched out as a starter, which is currently the role the Blue Jays are using him in this spring. And with Rodriguez, his preference, of course, is being in the majors, whether that's as a starter or as a reliever. He sees himself as a big league starter. But as we've already documented, unless Manoah struggles or injuries pop up, which they could, especially because the Blue Jays were among the healthiest pitching staffs in all baseball last year. But if neither of those two things occur, Rodriguez either will end up in the bullpen as a multi-inning reliever, or he'll continue to be stretched out as a starter at AAA. And it's very important that the Blue Jays choose a direction here this spring. Because as part of Rodriguez's contract, he can only be sent to the minors without needing his consent in 2024. Any point afterwards, he can block he can block an assignment to the minors. So if the Blue Jays are really content with trying him out as a starting pitcher, now's the time to do it, which is obviously why they're stretching him out as a starter this spring. But ultimately, I still see Rodriguez as a reliever. Like, he has that profile because he's more or less a reliever. Like, that's what his arsenal is as a heavy fastball slider pitcher guy profiles at. You know, maybe he can further develop his two-seamer and hone his craft on a changeup or a splitter, because apparently it's 2024 is going to be the year of splitters across baseball. But if he can expand his repertoire, maybe Rodriguez can develop into an impact starter. But I don't know. I'm lukewarm still on that topic, especially because the way the Blue Jays roster is constructed at this current time, he'd be more valuable to them in 2024, at least, in the bullpen. But considering the fact that Yusei Kikuchi is a free agent after this season, you'll have an open spot in the rotation. So if one way or another Rodriguez shows potential as a starting pitcher, then even if he ends up as a multi-inning reliever or even somebody who can give you multiple innings in high leverage situation spots, maybe there's the potential for him to at least compete again for a rotation spot next spring when, you know, unless the Blue Jays go out in free agency and sign another pitcher, which they very well could, or maybe they don't, and they leave that vacant spot for Rodriguez and Tiedemann and others to compete for. You know, that obviously that's further down the line, but it's definitely part of the conversation for Rodriguez, because again, this is the year you need to determine whether or not he's a viable option as a starter, potentially starting in 2025, maybe even earlier in this season. So he's high on my list of guys to keep an eye on this spring, along with obviously Alek Manoah. And if we want to stay on the pitching side here too, because there's a ton to talk about the Blue Jays offense. Like, there's so much to draw out there. So let's finish up with the pitching here before we move on to the offensive side of the ball here. And there are a few other names that I'm really intrigued to see this spring. If we want to stay at the big league level here, in the bullpen, obviously Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson. But this is also an interesting spring for Chad Green, because he looked fairly well in his return from Tommy John surgery last season. But historically, it's typically been that second season post-TJ surgery that a pitcher really regains his form. And with Chad Green, he didn't have that upper 90s velocity that he had pre-surgery. So I'm intrigued to see whether or not that velocity comes back a little bit more now that he's been able to have a healthy offseason and really get his footing under him this spring. So he's somebody that I'm really interested to see. And also too, with Jordan Hicks signing elsewhere in free agency, the Blue Jays do have a little bit of a hole in high leverage spots. They still, you know, they have Jordan Romano, they have Eric Swanson, Jimmy Garcia, Tim Mayza, and you can throw in Green and Cabrera and maybe even Richards too, but Richards is somebody as well that is going to have an important spring because he's out of options. And you know, even though he was a valuable pitcher for this team last season, he's kind of just a one-pitch guy. Like, there's nothing all that special about his fastball. And like we saw at certain points down the stretch last year, when that changeup isn't on, a lot of hitters can take him out of the ballpark pretty easily. And if we want to go big picture here with the Blue Jays bullpen, you really only have one viable option to send down to the minors, and that's Yennesis Cabrera. He's got one minor league option left. So does, like, Tim Mays has got two options. Swanson's got one. Romano's got two. But those three aren't going anywhere, right? Like, you're not sending any of those three to the minor leagues. Chad Green can't go to the minors. Yimi Garcia can't go. Richards can't go. And Mitch White's out of options. So if Trevor Richards doesn't have a good spring, which, if memory serves me right, he didn't last year. I think it was a little rocky, especially because it was the first go that the Blue Jays told him to ditch his curveball and only throw his fastball and changeup. So there was a little bit of an adjustment period there for him. But there are other guys knocking at the door too, right? Nate Pearson, most notably. He's somebody that is dying to prove himself worthy of an opportunity at the big league level. He looked great in small stints last year, but there were other spurts where he couldn't control the strike zone. It was not easy for me to say. His stuff is great. He led all Blue Jays pitchers in stuff plus last season, but he also finished last in location plus, right? So, you know, I'm really excited to see that again, year of the splitter, Nate Pearson has, you know, is at least tinkering with adding a splitter to his arsenal. But, you know, if he can't locate his fastball, slider, and curveball, none of it's going to matter. And he's only got one option left. So this is a huge year. This is a pivotal year for Nate Pearson. But if he shows out in spring training and somebody like Trevor Richards struggles, if you're the Blue Jays, like, sure, you want to stockpile as many options as you can, but, like, from a flexibility standpoint, from a quality standpoint, maybe you look at trading Trevor Richards if Nate Pearson forces the envelope, or even somebody else. Maybe it's Hagen Danner, who also has one option left. Zach Pop too. I mean, he's coming off a brutal 2023 season and really needs to turn things around because he only has one option left. But we know the potential that he has with that sinker slider mix. And another guy, Josfer Zulueta. Apparently he dealt with some knee pain last year on his surgically repaired knee, but he's somebody with that, you know, explosive arsenal that he has. He could force the envelope too with a good spring. And there are other guys coming too. Connor Cook, not even on the 40-man roster yet, but he's coming. He'll be Rule 5 eligible next winter, so you can guarantee that, you know, the Blue Jays are going to have to make space eventually on their 40-man roster for him. Hayden Yanger as well. He's an intriguing arm that the Blue Jays have in their system. He's also eligible for the Rule 5 draft next winter. You also look at somebody like Mason Fluharty, another explosive arm, a lefty too at that, who, you know, he's further away from the majors than the Zuluettas and Danners and Pearsons and Pops and Cooks and Yangers, but he's not that far away, you know, Double A right now. TJ Brock too, now that he's healthy again, maybe we see him forcing the envelope at AAA at some point later this year. There are options down in the minors, and the flexibility is the big sticking point for me, because, you know, like, you're not going to get through 162 games with just eight relievers. Guys are going to get tired. Guys are going to get injured. You're going to have to call up fresh arms. And when you only have Cabrera as an option to send down, and you really like having him in the pen as that second lefty, it gets a little tight. It gets a little tight. Now, there are ways around that too. Like, maybe the Blue Jays DFA Mitch White, Yariel Rodriguez breaks camp with the team as a multi-inning reliever, and you could send him down if you need a fresh arm. And maybe somebody of that group starts the year on the IL, and that gives you a little bit more of short-term flexibility. But ultimately, this is a big spring for Trevor Richards, and if he can't locate that changeup, the noise is going to continue to get louder for the Blue Jays to maybe explore something. Now, let's move over to the offense here, because it's interesting. It's very interesting. Now, let's start with the news. There have been two minor league signings since camp opened, that being Eduardo Escobar, switch hitting infielder, coming off a bad 2023 season, but he hits left-handed pitching very well, and he hit 20 home runs with the Mets in 2022 as a two-win player. So definitely some upside there. And then you also have Daniel Vogelbach, a left-handed slugger, 31 years old. He's coming off a pretty mediocre season in 2023, 13 home runs, 233, 339, 404 slash line. But there are a few things that Vogelbach does really well. Hits balls hard, doesn't chase, controls the strike zone, and gets walks. If we want to look at his historic metrics, 2022, that was his most recent season that he qualified in the majors. 94 percentile chase rate, 76th percentile whiff rate, 99th percentile walk rate, 75th percentile barrel rate. And he hits righties really well. And he makes some funny commercials too. I know that's, doesn't hold much merit, but certainly notable, right? And the reason I say it's interesting is because, obviously, the Blue Jays already have a ton of infielders. And they still need an outfielder. They still need an outfielder. Or at least another one. And it seems these two signings could very well lead to major league roster spots on the Blue Jays bench. Because the way I see it, Vogelbach was brought in to compete with Spencer Horwitz. Right? Because before that signing, projected Horwitz was expected to open the season on the Blue Jays bench. And for somebody like him, who is a valuable hitter, he gets on base like crazy. We saw it in a limited sample size last year. But for somebody that's still just 26 years old, you don't exactly want him sitting on the bench regularly. Like, if you had to pick between Horwitz and Vogelbach to play that role, you choose the guy who's 31 years old versus the 26-year-old. Because in all honesty, it is going to be tough for, or it would be tough for Horwitz or Vogelbach to earn many reps. Even though the Blue Jays still miss that left-handed presence that they lost with Brandon Belt, Justin Turner's going to play pretty regularly. against both righties and lefties. So that limits your options at being able to give reps to either Vogelbach or Horwitz, right? If you look at it and you look at it from a matchup standpoint, Vogelbach is somebody who does hit righties, who throw a lot of sinkers and sliders really well, and changeups too. So, you know, if somebody like Marcus Stroman were facing the Blue Jays, Vogelbach, if he were to make the team, he'd probably be starting at DH. And if you wanted to keep Justin Turner in the lineup, maybe you put him at third base, because as well, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is somebody who historically hasn't fared well against sinkers and changeups. So maybe you put Justin Turner at third, somebody like Kevin Biggio at second base, somebody that has hit well against sinkers, and you piece it together that way. You know, it truly seems like, because the Blue Jays spent the offseason adding, you know, largely inexpensive short-term additions rather than everyday players, they're going to be trying to piece third base, second base together based on matchup. Which isn't the worst idea in the world either. It actually, with the options they have available to them, makes a lot of sense. You know, if you want to compare it to something, it's like they're playing chess, not checkers, with their lineup construction here, where they're really going deep into the weeds about who's playing on a certain day. We want to look at somebody like Eduardo Escobar, who's likely in camp to compete with Santiago Espinal and, to a lesser extent, Ernie Clement, who's out of options. Escobar is somebody who historically has hit four-seamers really well. He's fared pretty effectively against curveballs and changeups as well. Where Espinal, well, he doesn't do, or he hasn't fared well against many pitches, but he's really struggled against four-seamers and sliders and sinkers, but he hits well versus changeups and cutters. So again, if Escobar were to make the team, and you're facing a pitcher that throws a lot of four-seamers and, say, curveballs, and two offerings that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa also hits well against, maybe, especially if that pitcher is a lefty, you're probably putting IKF at third, Escobar at second, and Biggio would be on the bench along with Vogelbach as well, but and Espinal too. But the way I see this too is, I already, you know, like I've reported throughout the winter, the Blue Jays have had conversations about trading Espinal. And that was even before you added Escobar to the mix. It was before you even signed IKF. They were already exploring that scenario. But now you add Escobar to the mix, and it's like, Espinal was already fairly redundant with IKF on the roster. Now you add Escobar, and it's like, man, there's no real spot for Espinal here. So pair that in with the fact that the Blue Jays still could benefit from acquiring a right-handed platoon outfielder. Maybe there's a trade to be had here. Especially the fact that the Blue Jays already have a lot of infielders in their system too, right? This isn't just a major league issue, or maybe it's not even an issue, a major league logjam, but it also blocks the pass for guys like Addison Barger, especially with the Vogelbach signing too. you know, Ernie Clement, Leo Jimenez. And Leo Jimenez is noteworthy, too, because he's down to his final option year. And he's somebody that can play at the major league level right now, at least defensively. Hitting, not so much. But his defense, without question, is big league caliber, both at shortstop and second base. If the Blue Jays don't have a spot for him, which right now they definitely don't, you got to see where you can find a home for him. Because, in my opinion, for somebody that's not even 23 years old yet, you can't afford to lose him for nothing next spring. To me, that would be a terrible allocation of assets. That would just be a terrible idea, to lose him for nothing, potentially. And if you're faced with trading him next spring, like, he's going to have next to no value, especially if he still shows that his bat is far behind his defense, which is currently the case. So again, maybe you find a team that has a need for infielders, which is a topic I covered earlier this week in a piece for Jays Nation. And the three teams that I looked at were the Los Angeles Angels, San Francisco Giants, and the Washington Nationals. All three could benefit from more infielders, particularly the additions of Espinal and somebody like Jimenez. Barger you could throw into that mix too. But it seems it would make too much sense for the Jays not to trade an infielder or two before opening day. It really does. They just have so many on their roster, so many that are capable of playing in the major leagues this season. You got to do something with them. And I don't foresee the fact that Eduardo Escobar would sign a minor league deal, one, without having an opto date included, and two, at least receiving some sort of assurance that he's going to have a chance to break camp with the team. And same thing for Vogelbach. Vogelbach is an easier case, obviously, as we already, you know, outlined with the Horwitz situation. But this team really can't afford to go into the year again without adding another right-handed outfielder to their team, right? Like, as currently constructed, we're looking at a scenario where the Blue Jays go two straight off-seasons without providing enough lineup balance in their outfield, right? We talked so much last spring about the fact that the Blue Jays needed to get another righty to complement the Varsho, Kiermaier, and Springer trio. Because again, when you're facing a lefty, ideally, you'd like to have Varsho or Kiermaier on the bench. And the Blue Jays were fortunate enough to be able to put Whit Merrifield in left field and be able to get away with that, even though Merrifield's defense was pretty meh for the most part in the outfield. And he obviously isn't the power hitter that the Blue Jays need. And there are still options available in free agency that could help them in this regard, right? Like Robbie Grossman, Adam Duvall, Tommy Pham, three hitters that are still available but could really help this team from a platoon perspective. But that would still leave the Blue Jays with too many cooks in the kitchen, obviously, right? That wouldn't solve their infield logjam, which is why it would make sense for the Blue Jays to look to solve that through a trade. Maybe you look at somebody like Taylor Ward in Los Angeles, somebody that doesn't have all that much team control left, and with the Angels possibly looking at moving Mike Trout to a corner outfield spot, maybe that pushes Ward out of the equation. Or maybe look at the Giants and somebody like Austin Slater, who certainly seems like his days are numbered with the team, not just because he's a free agent after this year, but the Giants have some young outfielders knocking at the door too. And sure, they acquired Otto Lopez, who is capable of playing the infield, but he can also play the outfield too. So I don't think that would preclude the Giants from acquiring somebody like Espinal or another infielder from the Blue Jays. And Slater, somebody who mashes lefties. Like, that was literally his role on the Giants last season. If there was a lefty on the mound, he was in the lineup. And then you have the Washington Nationals. Lane Thomas is a guy I've liked for a while. The only issue is his acquisition cost. The Nationals have valued him as an everyday player, and right now that doesn't make sense for the Blue Jays to give up assets for a player of that caliber, because he wouldn't be playing every day for the Blue Jays. He'd be utilized in a platoon role. So, you know, we'll see if anything changes in that regard, but those are three players right there that I would have high on my target list if I were the Blue Jays. So, you know, there are more options out there too, but one way or another, I have a hard time seeing this team going into the 2024 season without picking up another outfielder. I really do. Like, with how, you know, less than ideal their deployment was last year, can you really afford to take that chance again, especially now that Whit Merrifield isn't on your team? And the fact that, as currently constructed, Davis Schneider is lined up to take over that role, probably splitting it with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa too, but still, those two guys, you'd probably prefer not to have exclusively in the lineup every day, or close to every day. Especially when, again, like, there are other power-hitting options available to you that could further lengthen this lineup in that regard. Otherwise, you're looking at this team really betting on regressions to the mean for guys like Springer and Guerrero and Varsho and Kirk, which has a very high likelihood of happening. But even still, this team needs to be shooting for the division, not a wild card spot. And if you don't go out and acquire another outfielder, I just don't see how this team can do that. You know, sure, the rest of the AL East and the American League as a whole hasn't improved all that much. Right, like, the Yankees acquired Juan Soto, which should make their offense better. But from a starting pitching perspective, like, are they really all that better than they were in 2023? I don't know. I mean, it depends what Carlos Rodon looks like, if he can stay healthy. What's Marcus Stroman like? What kind of version do they get out of the rest of their arms in their rotation? What's Nestor Cortez look like? Their bullpen's going to be really good again. But I don't know, have they really moved the needle all that much? It's debatable. The Orioles, they'll probably come down a little bit. I mean, the addition of Corbin Burns should help fill a massive void at top of their rotation. But if their offense regresses significantly, they won't have Felix Bautista for most of the season, if not all of it, even though they added Craig Kimbrell. I don't know. They're a team that seems vulnerable to me. The Tampa Bay Rays are the Tampa Bay Rays. They're gonna surprise a lot of people again, because that's what they do every year. the Red Sox are probably going to finish last because, well, they're a mess. They don't like to spend money and they don't know how to spend it wisely. So that's them. And then you look at the rest of the American League and it's just like, you know, the Rangers haven't done anything. Maybe they bring back Jordan Montgomery. Maybe they don't. Who knows? The Astros, sure, they seem like the favorite in that division. The Mariners, they look to be, you know, a contender this year for a wild card spot. The AL Central is, well, who knows? Wouldn't surprise me at all if the Kansas City Royals end up making a run at the division title. Like that's how fluid that division is. So if you're the Blue Jays right now, you're a strong bet to secure one of those three wildcard spots. But again, like that shouldn't be the goal for this team. The goal should be winning the AL East. And right now it just doesn't seem their team is good enough to do that, even if guys like Springer and Guerrero and Kirk and Varsho regress to the mean. And that Manoa helps make up for some of the regression or injuries that occur on the starting pitching side this season. You know, it just... I still think there's more room for this team to grow. And, you know, again, like, there's still time for the Blue Jays to improve this roster, too, right? Like, last time I checked, everyone that can help them in the outfield and, you know, even potentially in the infield, somebody like Matt Chapman, is still available. Which is crazy to say with spring training games set to open in a few days, or actually today, with the Dodgers and Padres kicking things off. But it would just be a really, really giant risk in my mind for the Blue Jays to, you know, bet heavily on a return to form for most of their key core hitters. So We'll see where that goes, but I would really like to see this team add another outfielder before opening day. And you know, before we wrap up here, I do want to mention a few other things that have caught my attention in this spring already. That being, of course, a few former Blue Jays helping out as mentors down in Dunedin. Edwin Encarnacion, of course, is the most notable one, and this isn't the first time that he's been around the team, but R.A. Dickey is also in camp too, which is notable because the Blue Jays signed another knuckleball pitcher over the offseason, and there were some rumors that because of that, Dickey would be in camp to help, you know, teach and usher a pitcher like that. But it's, you know, for a nostalgic feel, it's great to see former Blue Jays like Edwin and Dickey helping out with the team. You know, it's really fun for me personally. You know, and as well too, like for a team that is still looking to win its first playoff game since that 2015-2016 club, certainly doesn't hurt to have players from that team around this current group. You know, it's pretty cool. I hope there's more of it, honestly. And as well too, I want to pour one out for Hyunjin Ryu too, because if, you know, for some reason you missed it, Ryu has gone back to South Korea. He's decided it's time to go back to his old KBO team, the Hawan Eagles. Probably may have butchered that pronunciation, but it became official on Wednesday that Hyunjin Ryu has signed an 8-year, $12.8 million contract, which is the richest deal in KBO history, both from a term and value standpoint. In currency over in South Korea, that 12.8 million US is equivalent to 17 billion won, which is pretty crazy. It's also crazy that Ryu signed an 8-year deal as a soon-to-be 36-year-old. That, you know, that certainly caught me by surprise, but, you know, I love it. I wish all the best to Ryu, because he's, in my mind, he's somebody that was still underrated with this team. Sure, he wasn't a dominating pitcher like, say, Kevin Gausman. But he was still a very pivotal signing for this team. If we want to rewind to back to when Ryu signed with the Blue Jays, he inked that 4-year deal in December of 2019. This team really wasn't looking like the beginning of a contender. That 2019 season was pretty rough. I know it seems like a billion years ago because of COVID and everything. But for those of you who remember the 2019 season for the Blue Jays, it was bad. Sure, Vladdy debuted and later Bo Bichette and Cap Biggio as well. But outside of that, it was not good. It was rough. So coming out of that year, to be able to sign one of the top starting pitchers on the market like Ryu, that was huge. That was huge for this team, and it was a benchmark for the start of this competitive window. That 2020 starting rotation was not good. Ryu, without a doubt, was the bright point there, and that 2020 season he had was insane. Surprised the hell out of me. And it's a shame that the Blue Jays couldn't do anything in the playoffs either. But it's unfortunate the way that Tommy John surgery really cut out the second half of Ryu's tenure with the Blue Jays. But I'm so happy that he was able to go out on a high note and return from Tommy John surgery and pitch a few more times for this team, because he was monumental. His presence on this team was monumental in 2020 and 2021. And that can't be forgotten. That shouldn't be forgotten. Even though he wasn't around much from a game perspective in 2023 and 2022 as well, there's no denying that this team doesn't progress the way it has without Ryu joining this team during those first two seasons of his tenure. There was a lot that went on behind the scenes that hasn't been reported, that he really made a difference in the clubhouse. His leadership was undeniable. He was such a fun guy to be around, it sounded. So, it's bittersweet that we won't see him in the major leagues anymore. But definitely gonna pour one out for him and wish him nothing but the best in his return to the KBO. And I can't wait to see his first start and his debut. I, without a doubt, no matter what time it's on, it'll be on my schedule, and I won't dare miss it. So, but that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.